All right, everybody, here on the show today, we have Dan Straley, literally fresh off the field from an Iowa Cubs game. Dan, thank you so much for joining the show.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. It's awesome. This is actually the first time I've ever been able to interview somebody who's actually active in professional baseball currently. Everybody else has been retired, which has been great, but it's definitely cool to really get a different perspective on this.
Yeah, no, I feel honored. I love the name of the podcast. I think it's funny. It's catchy. And yeah, I just appreciate you having me on, man. I'm always willing to jump on these things and just share part of my journey and hope that it inspires somebody along their way.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And yeah, the name is no disrespect to players like you or anybody else I've covered either, by the way. It's just, you know, on the media today, you see so much about like Shohei and everything. And they're so talented, those types of players. But there's hundreds of other guys, you know, who had talent and also had success in the MLB too, so I love to cover them.
Yeah, no, it's you know, I have my own podcast, and it's called the Journeyman Podcast. Mm-hmm. And the whole point of it is we tell the story of baseball from the perspective of the 99% of players and people involved in the game that aren't on the cover of MLB The Show and aren't leading the headlines on ESPN, because there's so much more to this game than those players, right? Like, yeah, obviously they drive it. They're the superstars. They're the freaks of the business, and we all love watching them play, and including those of us that play it. We enjoy watching those guys compete. We love watching them do their thing. But from the equipment guys to the media to the equipment providers to the clubhouse, everybody that's just a part of this thing, to front office members to the hall of pretty good ball players out there. We try to tell the story from the same way. So I really enjoy the concept that you're creating here.
Thank you so much. And so this kind of leads me into my first question. We just mentioned that you're fresh off the field, had a day game today. How did this signing with the Cubs come about? Did you reach out to them? Did they contact you? How did you get this minor league deal worked out?
No, none of that actually is really with the players. Like, all that's just with our agents and what they're doing. And, you know, I can't really speak to everything he did. I've had the same agent for 16 years and you know, I trust him and he's working hard for me to get me jobs. And my job was just to keep my head down and be ready. And he told me a few months ago, he's like, nothing's going to happen until it does. And when it does, it's going to be quick. And they're going to be like, hey, can you start tomorrow, kind of thing. And he nailed it. You know, I was training at Driveline in Seattle, and those of you that don't know, that's just one of the major training facilities around the country. In my mind, it's the best. It's, you know, it just happens to be close to my house, ish, West Coast close. So, you know, 5-hour drive is pretty close. And so, I trained there and was just built myself up as a starting pitcher. And I was up there the week before, and I just kind of had this like epiphany where it was like, man, like independent leagues are starting next week. And so now teams, when they need somebody, because there's injuries or guys are underperforming or whatever the situation is, no longer are they just looking at who's training at facilities, but they're going to have all these guys getting live game reps in independent ball. So I called my agent and said, hey, I know we've not discussed this one bit, but, let's try to reach out to the Long Island Ducks and see if they'll take me. And they did, you know, we called them, they were very welcoming. I got there, went to two practices, and my agent calls me, and I thought he was just calling to check in. I just sat down in my hotel room with some Chipotle, and he's like, hey, I got you a job. And I was like, yeah, dude, I know, I'm here. I had practice today. And he's like, no, like the Chicago Cubs called. And, he's like, you know, he's like, I'm only telling you this cause I think, you know, we're at like the 1-inch line and they're just going to need you to go take a physical. And so it really did happen that fast, where I was, you know, just embracing where I was and was willing to go put the work in independent leagues and try to get an affiliate job that way. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I got there, you know, the Cubs called and I flew to Chicago, had a physical there with the team doctors, and then flew to Buffalo the next day and then pitched the next day. And it was an absolute whirlwind of 10 days. I was in Seattle, then I was back home in Oregon, then I was down in Phoenix for a few days, then I was back home in Oregon, then I was in Long Island, New York, and then I was in Chicago, and then I was wow. in Buffalo, and then I was in Iowa. Like, I literally was just bouncing around the United States here. Mm. And it was a crazy few days, and it gave me a lot of perspective and a lot of just like appreciation, and feel really blessed for this opportunity with these guys, and a lot of gratitude toward the situation. And really has a different mindset for me than I've ever had in the past coming into a season. Definitely not how you would draw up a normal a way to get to a AAA season or get the AAA season going, but it's my route, it's my journey, and I'm just blessed to be honest though, man. I get a chance to play for my 16th year as professional now.
Yep. It's really so awesome that you got another opportunity. I follow you on social media, and so I saw that your bio at one point, it was like a pitcher looking for another opportunity or something close to that. And so I keep up with all the veteran minor league signings, and so I saw that you got signed by the Cubs, and right away I was like, well, he got his opportunity. That's so cool.
Yep.
And so it's
really chipping a chair, man.
It's really crazy too. You just described it, how quickly it seems to happen. You think like a signing, getting a new player, doing a physical, you think that would be kind of like an arduous process that would take a long time. But the way you described it, it seems like it was like one day here, one day there, and it was very quick, which is really surprising to me, honestly.
Yeah, no, they, you know, we agreed to terms. They flew me to Chicago. They sent me an itinerary, and it was like, hey, your physical starts at 7 a.m. You're going to be done about 2 p.m. And, you know, then we'll call you later that night to let you know if you passed or not based on what our doctors had to say. And you go from there. And I just got an email later that night. I didn't even get a phone call. I got an email later that night with a flight to Buffalo. So I called my agent and I'm like, hey, does this mean I'm good? And he's like, give me 5 minutes, called me back. And he's like, yeah, just got off the phone with them. Everything's set up. We're good to go. Documents are signed. You're a Cub. So it is quick. It is quick. Like, you just gotta, you know, as you get older, I think they just want to get all the MRIs and check you out and make sure that, you know, you're not showing up broken and just going to be a problem, you know, being hurt for them, because clearly them signing me, they had a need and I fit that need. And I'm just like I said, man, just grateful that I put in all that time at home when no one was watching, put in all that time up in Seattle. You know, just it could have been really easy just to be down on myself and just kind of put my tail between my legs and just kind of cower away. But I just kept pushing, man, just kept my head down, just kept believing in myself and believing in the process and the journey I was on. And, you know, by getting this job opportunity, by no means is that over, right? Like, it's just like it's the next phase, it's the next step. And so grateful to be here, but you know, man on a mission and ready to put the work in and what it takes to get back to the major leagues.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's so cool to see that you're still putting in that work. And you just mentioned that as well. And I'm sure every interview you've given recently has asked you this, but like, what's driven you to chase this opportunity? Because you've thrown over 800 MLB innings. You had a successful stint in the KBO. You've been an above average starting pitcher multiple seasons. You've thrown over 180 innings twice in your career. Like, obviously, you've had a career probably better than 99% of the people who have stepped on the diamond. What's driven you to keep chasing this opportunity?
I think each time that, you know, as we get older as athletes, so we make a decision for next year, I've never thought that I was done. I've never thought, like, this was it kind of deal. But this go around, it's been about showing my son, who's going to be 7 here in a few months, what it takes to chase your dreams and what it takes to put your head down and work hard for what you want in life. And I made sure that he knew what I was doing and why I was doing it. And he was a part of that journey and a part of that process. And even though I pointed out to him all the time that, like, even though they've started spring training, daddy still has to come home and do this. I still have to keep working hard for this, because my goal is to play in the major leagues where you can come watch. And when I went to Korea years ago, I said I wanted to finish my career in the big leagues when my son was old enough to remember me playing Major League Baseball. And whether or not I succeed in that particular goal, I've shown my son, who means everything to me, and I've shown, like, between the hard work that and all the sacrifice that my wife's put into for me to keep chasing this dream, we've shown him what it takes to go work hard for what you want in this world, which is exactly what we're talking about, you know, playing in the major leagues. And, you know, I feel like a young prospect when I'm here. I don't feel like a guy that's got all this service time and a guy that's got all this, you know, success in the big leagues and just years put into this game. I feel like a kid that's just hungry to get up there and get a taste of the big leagues for the first time again. And I think that's a good thing. I think that, you know, I'm eager to learn and learn about how the game's changing, how I can fit into that change, and how I can be a part of the Cubs organization this year. And, you know, like, deep down inside, like, I see careers like Rich Hill, where it's like, maybe I can show up to the Cubs and, work my butt off, get an opportunity to go to the big leagues, and who knows what could happen.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? Who cares that you're 35? If you show up and do your job, no one cares how old you are. No one cares like what your stuff looks like if you're getting outs, right?
Exactly.
All that stuff just kind of plays into it if you're not getting outs or you're a prospect, and it's just how many opportunities you get because you throw hard or do this. Like, no one cares if you get outs, like what your stuff typically looks like.
Mm.
And so just been working really hard for that. That's what drives me. That's what motivates me, family, and just really the desire just to be the best in the world one more time.
I must say, from a fan's perspective, it's really cool to hear about an MLB veteran who still has a hunger and a passion for baseball. Because you think of like a stereotypical athlete, like a millionaire who doesn't really care about the game. It's just his job. And not saying that every athlete is like that, but it's just what you hear about. And so it's honestly really cool to hear about a guy who's already had so much success, but still has a passion for the game and wants to do more. It's really awesome to hear about.
Dude, I'm kind of a sicko. Like, we had Monday off, and I watched 2.5 baseball games on my Apple TV sitting in my hotel room. I was just like, that's just who I am, man. Like, I grew up watching baseball. That was like my babysitter. Like, my dad and I would sit down and watch baseball games. I love the game. I love the, knowing so much about it. Now I watch the game with such a different lens where it's like I'm seeing all the cat and mouse stuff. I'm watching how guys are swinging, how they're reacting, practicing reading swings, practicing just like in my head, like what I would do here, or what I would do there. And it's just like, I just can't stop, dude. I love this game. I love all the aspects of it. I love the analytics of it. I love all the data that's come into it. And it's just kind of ingrained in who I am. I've always said that I'll never let baseball be my identity, but it is something that I'm very passionate about and something that I just enjoy. And I also enjoy helping, guys that are on their way up that have never been in the big leagues. I love talking to them about what to expect, how to prepare, how to help them, when they do show up, go be the best versions of themselves, because I want people to experience what I experience, and that's show up and be comfortable and go get your job done. Like, don't have all this external stuff that you're worried about. And it's just like small stuff like that, that I just get so excited about. And, I just really enjoy the clubhouse aspect too, of just like meeting people and hearing where they came from and how they got here. And, everybody's got their own story. And I just love hearing that. I'm such a process oriented person that I love hearing people's process or people's journeys. And it's just so fun for me. So just the gratitude to be back in this spot is never been higher for me. And it is like just a passion for the game and a passion for the people that I'm in the clubhouse with.
Well, that's super cool to hear about you having a passion for the game. I love to hear that from former players, because you don't always hear that, especially from people who've played as long as you. And so my next question would have to be, so you last pitched in the MLB in 2019. You did have a stint in the Diamondbacks organization in 2022, correct?
Yeah.
So have you had a hard time adjusting to the pitch clock and limited mound visits, limited pickoff attempts? Has that been something that you've had to work to adjust to, or has it kind of come easy to you?
Dude, that's a good question. When I was overseas in Korea, I spent parts of 4 years there, just so people listening can understand that. Like, I was over there for 2 years, came back for half a season with the Diamondbacks, didn't see myself getting called up, had an opportunity, went back to Korea. But in Korea, they have the same pitch clock system. So that part was easy, but take it one step further. Over the course of my 5 years plus in the major leagues, I was always a top 10 fastest worker in the big leagues.
Mm-hmm.
And that was ingrained in veteran position players behind me when I was younger, just like the importance of working quick so that the position players are ready, and keeping the hitters like kind of uncomfortable in how fast I'm working was always something that was kind of just ingrained in who I was as a starter. So no, it isn't. Like, I actually was noticing in my start just on Sunday that I was delivering many pitches with 10, 11 seconds left on the clock, quite honestly. Like, it's just the pitch comp system is great. I think that was the newest addition. I've only had 2 starts with it. But, like, it's literally like a little speaker right above your ear, and it's just, like, the most mundane fastball up, fastball in, like, changeup. Like, it's just, like, it's kind of, it's like, how did it take us so long to advance this system, because it works so quickly and so great. So it wasn't really an adjustment. It was just kind of nice. I don't have to you know, I vary times and be quick to the plate, mm-hmm. and that kind of controls the running game in itself. I mean, that's just, again, ingrained in who I am as a ball player. So I kind of like that I don't just have to worry about picking off all the time. It's more of holding the ball, giving yourself enough time to hold the ball, varying times to the plate, varying mm-hmm. when you let go of it from when you come set, like all the small stuff that you're supposed to be taught in the minor leagues. That, you know, controlling the running game is a huge part of baseball. It's how you keep runs off the board. 90 feet's important in baseball. So obviously that's part of it with, you know, the new guys coming up through the system. They're just going to have that ingrained where you only get two pickoffs, you know, kind of thing. Yeah. But I don't think it really bothers me. You do have to really pay attention to it in terms of, like, you know, sometimes it's okay just to step off. If you're not going to make the clock, it's better to step off and burn one of your disengagements versus, you know, just picking a pitch and throwing it. And mm-hmm. I did that once the other day and was like, okay, like nothing bad happened, but I was like a learning point for myself though, where it's like, it's better to step off than this. So some small adjustments there, but all in all, I kind of like the rules. You know, I think that keeping the game moving is going to help hopefully the fans enjoy the experience better. No one really enjoys a 5-hour baseball game. Even the players on the field don't really enjoy a 5-hour baseball game. But as long as we find that kind of happy medium where we get to keep the same quality of play up on the field and keep the game moving, I'm all for it.
Another rule change that's happened is the universal DH, of course. Now, you have 10 career base hits, including 2 doubles. So do you? Mm-hmm. Let's say you get called up to the Cubs this season. Are you going to be sad about not having the opportunity to take a few swings? Or are you happy to just sit back and let the DH take care of it?
Dude, I wanted nothing to do with batting. You know, you said, yeah, I got 10 hits. I was a really good bunter, and I really took a lot of pride in that. But at the end of the day, like, no one came to the ballpark to watch me go 10 for 160 in my career. Like, it just wasn't pretty. You know, I hadn't hit in 10 years, and I was a rookie with Oakland, and I'm facing, you know, Garrett Cole. My first at bat in a decade. Man. I'm just like, there's no prepping for this. Like, this guy, you know, at the time he wasn't the best, but you could see he was, you know, he threw really hard. And it was just like, I got no chance here. Like, let's give people a show, right? That's what it's called, the show, right? Let's give people a show. Let's give people what they want to see. And I also like it too, because it gives jobs to another 15 guys, the DH role, you know? And the argument could be made, it takes some jobs away too from bench players, and all the constant navigating up and down a lineup of a National League game is gone. And I did enjoy that aspect of it, because it made the game a lot different in the National League versus the American League in terms of the strategy. But at the end of the day, I think it's going to help players stay on the field longer and help players stay healthier. And it's going to keep the best talent in the game mm-hmm. playing every night in the big leagues. And that's ultimately what the goal is to have the best players in the world playing at their highest at 100% health as often as possible, and have that product be Major League Baseball. And so I really think that they've made some really good calls with that stuff and not allowing pitchers to hit anymore.
Mm. Those are some very valid and good points. I just had to ask, because I know some pitchers love the idea of being able to kind of help out their own cause, you know.
Oh, so it's fun. I was just curious. Don't get me wrong. It's fun. I don't need to watch myself go 0-for-4 with 4 strikeouts anymore. Like, I'm good there. Like, I've been there, done that. Fortunate enough that I got to play in that era of baseball. And now I feel like an old man when, like, you know, back in my day, we used to hit, you know, and it's like, it's gone. You know, that's the young guys I'm around now. I don't even touch bats. So it's just so different.
Yep. It is so different. I think, like a lot of most baseball fans who know about your career, we first heard about you in Oakland, obviously. And that 2013 Oakland Athletics team, if you look at that roster, that was a special team that you were a part of. And what I want to talk to you about is your postseason start. Against that tough Detroit Tigers lineup, you went 6 innings and only gave up 3 runs. And now your team didn't win the game, but that's still a quality start. How did you find out that you were going to take the bump for that game? And what was your thought process like? Were you nervous, or were you kind of just riding a wave of energy?
Dude, so that whole process for me was actually really cool. So the year before, if we go back to 2012, we played that same Detroit team. And I actually didn't make the postseason roster. And I got flown to Arizona to stay ready with another group of guys. And I remember talking to my pitching coordinator, and his name is Gil. And I was like, Gil, like, what can I do as a ball player that next year, when we're back in the playoffs, you guys are begging me to take the ball, not asking me to go to Arizona? And so we talked about, you know, what I did, what I didn't do, and all this kind of stuff. And so the next year when it rolled around and they came up to me and told me that I was starting game four, I was like, I was ready. You know what I mean? And it maybe showed me that when I was younger the year before that I wasn't ready. That, like, deep down inside, like, I was probably really nervous about that. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd had 30 innings in the major leagues. Like, I was still a really young guy. Fast forward another year, now I've still only got 180 innings in the major leagues. But going into that game, I was prepared. And to be quite honest, like, I had to kind of watch the game back to see, like, what really happened. Mm-hmm. Like, you're so locked in that you just one pitch at a time. And it was like every lesson that my coaches along the way in the Oakland A's minor league system had taught me about staying in the moment and focusing one pitch at a time, one pitch at a time, one pitch at a time, one pitch at a time. They pounded that in us. When I was in that big stage, that big moment, that's all I did was one pitch at a time for as many pitches as they'd let me. And, you know, to this day, like, the three runs you're talking about, like, it was one pitch on a fastball to Johnny Peralta, and it was just like, you know, struck him out earlier in the game, or no, ground out on that same pitch earlier in the game, and, you know, the funny thing is, he wouldn't even be allowed to play in that game if that game happened this year, because you can't play in the playoffs the same season that you get suspended for performance-enhancing substances.
I forgot all about that.
Yeah. I didn't. And so, yeah, and, you know, that whole inning was just crazy how, you know, just ball just kind of got dunked into left field. And then even the home run I gave up that allowed all three runs was just like an inch past Cespedes' glove. Like, this stuff is vivid in my memory once I went back and watched it. And, like, that game was actually pretty crazy because you go look at it and, like, we had bases loaded, nobody out in the seventh, and in jogs Max Scherzer and just turned on the Jets, man. But, yeah, forever grateful for that. And honestly, just working my butt off to try to get back to that same spot where I get a chance to go do that again. You know, it'd be pretty cool to have that big of a gap in playoff appearances. But, like, that's ultimately what we play this game for, right? Just to go out there and try to win a championship. And, you know, why not me? Mm-hmm. That's the way I've kind of lived my whole career. And I was a 24th rounder turned top prospect eventually. It's like, why not me? Just go out there and, you know, it's all the cliches things of baseball that make sense, but they work for a reason. It's like, you know, control what you can control and the rest will take care of itself. And so I just put my head down on work and I've always just been that way. And, you know, it's worked out for me for, you know, 16 seasons and I'm not going to change that. So, you know, circling back on what you said, like, that game was electric. It was amazing. I was definitely ready for the moment. You know, now that I'm 10 years older, like, proud of myself that I got to do it. But, man, am I just hungry to get back to that same spot.
Definitely. I was actually 11 years old at that time, and I watched that game on TV. And so it's really crazy to be talking to you about that game right now.
Yeah, dude, that game was, you know, I had no three-ball counts in the entire start.
Mm-hmm.
I threw I think it was like 15 of 15 changeups for strikes, but only like two of them were actually in the strike zone. It was just like one of those days where, like, everything was working, everything was commanded, everything was spot on. And mind you, I throw 90, 91. It wasn't like I was up there just blowing 95, 97 by people, like, right? Like, I'm a pitcher. I'm not just a thrower. So, you know, being on that stage at that time was just it was incredible, man. Like,
yeah.
I wish fans really understood how much energy a stadium has, like, directly impacts the product on the field. Like, when fans bring it, like, we're locked in more. And not that we're not locked in when it's fans aren't being loud and packing the house out, but it just makes it so much easier for us to do our job when the stadiums are packed full. And it's like such, like, a, you know, a catch-22, because the only way to pack stadiums in most cities is to be a really good baseball team. And so it's like, you know, playing in Oakland, I know times have changed there, but, like, I got to play in a lot of sellout crowds in Oakland, and that place is electric, man. When those fans show up. But then at the reverse of that, like, reverse side of that is, you know, when the product on the field isn't as good, the fans don't show up, and that's not unique to there. Like, that's pretty much anywhere. I feel like the places that, you know, whether or not the product on the field in Chicago is amazing, the stands are packed. You know, whether or not the product on the field in Boston, the stands are packed. Yankee Stadium, stands are packed. San Francisco, Dodger Stadium. Well, Dodgers are always good, but the stands are packed. Right, like, you look around the rest of Major League Baseball, no one was showing up to the 111 loss Astros.
Yeah.
You know? Now yeah. they're doing fine. Yeah. But no one was showing up then. So, yeah, being able to experience that, knowing that, you know, millions of people are watching this game on TV, sold out crowd. It was electric, man. Like, I wish I could just bottle up that feeling for the rest of my life and just share that with people as I get to keep on living this journey.
You know, that feeling definitely had to be special. And like you said, you can say what you want about Oakland baseball now, but back then that team was amazing. That's such a fun roster to look right. back on. They had so many pitchers like you in their like mid to early 20s, and all of them had like sub 4 ERAs. It was just amazing the talent they had. Whether it was like you, AJ Griffin, Jared Parker, all you guys. That was a great pitching yeah. staff.
It was, yeah. And we had Bartolo, kind of our old man veteran, just kind of leading our way there, and Brandon McCarthy and Brett Anderson and Tommy Malone, Sonny Gray. Like, yep. we had a lot of really good ball players on that. Scott Kazmir for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
We had a lot of really good starting pitchers there to choose from. So it was just a good time, man. That was a great group of guys to be a rookie from. A lot of really good veterans in the clubhouse too to learn from and to teach us how to be big leaguers and how to get our job done every fifth day. But yeah, to have an entire rotation made up of rookies, all of us winning at least 10 games was something pretty special mm-hmm. and something that you don't see every day, something yeah. you'll see every year. So
yeah, I'd be shocked. You could probably go 10 years from now and still might not ever even see that. Like, that's right. truly impressive. And now one right. thing you hear about is that baseball is a business, and you've been traded four yes. times in your career. Did it get easier each time as it happened, or did it always kind of come at you as a shock?
First time, it felt like your longtime girlfriend just dumped you. Like, what am I going to do now? I got to go meet these new people. But quite honestly, like, yeah, man, I've been on 10 different organizations. This is actually my first time really kind of doubling back.
Mm-hmm.
And it just doesn't matter. Like, as weird as that sounds, like, after the second, third, fourth times, like, I have a job to do. Somebody mm. wanted me enough to fill a need, and I get to go there and be the best teammate I can possibly be. And every fifth day, go leave it out there for my team and for the fans that are watching the game and try to win a baseball game. And having that kind of perspective really helped me show up to new clubhouses. It is a little bit, you know, first day of school feeling when you walk yeah. in and you're uncomfortable. You just kind of, you bond pretty mm-hmm. quickly. It's baseball, so we all have that in common. And you just try to get to know the people around you. And, you know, we're all good at baseball, so we don't really talk about baseball. We talk about everything else in life. We talk about where we came from and, you know, common friendships we have or, you know, just things like that. And so, mm-hmm. It's not that it gets better. I think we just become a little older and a little wiser and understand the situation we're in a little bit better and just show up and do your job because somebody wanted you bad enough that they traded for you, yeah. you know? And that's just the way you got to think of it. You can't think of it the reverse where somebody thought you were worth getting rid of to yeah. bring in somebody new for. So you just gotta keep going and understand at the end of the day, it is a business, and we are just assets, and we do have a value assigned to us. And if we're overperforming our you know, estimated value, they're going to trade us. Yeah. And if we're underperforming our estimated value, then if we're underperforming it, you know, and stuff like that, you just get let go. And if you're overperforming, often they trade you because there's surplus value, and that's just business. And it sucks to put it that way, but that's just the reality of the situation.
Yep. Yeah, there are definitely two ways you could look at it. Like, oh, man, they don't want me anymore. Or you could look at it how you're saying is like, look at all these teams that do want me. Because obviously they wouldn't right. seek you out and call up the GM or whoever's in charge and go, hey, give me Dan Straley. I'll give you this prospect or this veteran for you. So that is a good way to right. look at it.
Yeah, you know, the glass is half full or it's half empty, right? Mm-hmm. It's just how you want to approach life with it.
Definitely. And so something I want to ask you, and I'm very interested about, is your time in the KBO. And so obviously, other than the language barrier, were there any big differences that you faced there? And how nerve-wracking was it to just pick up and go to the KBO? Like, was it just something totally crazy to you, or did you adjust quickly? How was it?
There's a pretty good adjustment period, don't get me wrong. But getting over there, I had to deal with that. That was right when COVID hit. So there was a whole other layer to it. But the baseball, like I said, it's like when you get traded here, baseball's baseball. And so even around the world, yeah, there's a few different rules, some small things about, you know, the rubber on the mound has like two different layers to it. Mm-hmm. That way you're not pitching off of dirt, like small things like that. The baseball's slightly different. But like I was on my way over there and I called four or five former KBOers and asked them everything I could think about their experience so that when I walked in there, I could be as prepared as possible. And Josh Lindblom, I played with him in Oakland in AAA, and then he went to Korea, had a very successful career, and ultimately came back and signed a nice deal with the Brewers before he retired. And he said to me, when you get over there, just remember that you joined them, they did not join you. And if you can like live that and just love on your teammates and just be a good person, like you're going to have success. Because pitching's pitching. You know, you're going to have good days, you're going to have bad days. If I go up there and give up seven runs, it doesn't mean I suck. It just means I didn't get it done today. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I mean, you don't do this for 16 years and it's because you suck. Like, that's just not how this works.
Exactly.
And so if I give it up one day, it doesn't mean I suck. You know, it's just like, so that's pitching. That's baseball. But if you can remember that you joined them, meaning, you know, the way they do stretch is different. The amount of meetings they have is different. The way that they handle rainouts is different. The way that they do scheduling, the way that they, you know, lean on certain people is different. It's not always expected. It's just different. Mm-hmm. And so embracing that concept made it really easy for me to transition to playing over there. I was also around a really good group of people that like a really good support system of players and staff. Had a decent amount of English speakers around me. My GM over there spoke English.
Oh, perfect.
Translator was great. You know, you're with two other, you know, non-Koreans on your team as well. We had a hitting coach that was American. Like, we had a catching coach that was a former teammate of mine. So, like, I was around people, enough people to help me transition with that and not feel so isolated and alone. Because that was probably the hardest thing to deal with at times was, you know, just the amount of time you spend alone over there. Mm-hmm. And I'm a pretty social person. I enjoy my alone time like everybody else, but I also need that time with people. And, you know, kind of hard to come by sometimes, but ultimately, leaving my family behind for 10 months and going to play baseball was probably harder than anything else about being over there. And then the next year they got to come with me. But anyway, yeah, like it was a great experience. Loved so much of it, so much of it. And will be forever grateful to have that experience in my life and forever grateful for what I learned about who I am as a person, who I am as a baseball player. It made me really kind of understand a little bit better about like all the Latino teammates I'd had, mm-hmm. and what they were going through and how they were all bonded together. It made so much more sense to me how I was so bonded with the other guys. Dude, today I was finished running after my bullpen and looked up and a former KBO or Wes Parsons was standing right there in the corner and we talked for 10-15 minutes where it's just like we had never would have met each other probably.
Yeah.
Had it not been for the KBO experience. And while we were on different teams, because you're over there, like you just connect with people. And it just helped me understand that window of how a lot of my Latino teammates have connected that way over the years. And you see how bonded they are and how well they know each other, even though they're not on the same teams. And it's just, mm-hmm. I just understood so much more and just got so much better life perspective about being over there. And so, you know, I was coming off a knee surgery and found myself over in Korea, very blessed for that opportunity and that time. You know, and it's just kind of like one of those deals where I was very grateful for it, but I couldn't be more happy to be back. And just, again, now I'm ready for this next opportunity. And I'll just keep going until the opportunities are gone. You know, it's like I feel like I'm put on this earth to throw baseballs, and I'm just going to keep doing it as long as they'll let me.
Well, definitely. And Mr. Straley, that is all the questions I have. I just want you to know, and I'm sure you hear it from a lot of people, I and everyone listening to this will be really rooting for you to make it, man. I really hope you make it. You've worked hard. You seem like a great guy. I don't think anyone better than you could do it. I really hope you make it, sir.
Hey, I appreciate it, man. And thanks for having me. Yeah, dude, keep going. Keep crushing this podcast. I love that you're getting stories out there from, you know, current players, retired players, whoever you can get. Keep doing it. I know it's fun. I know it's all.
Yeah.
sharing the light of this game and showing a different side of this game that's seen, you know, in the mass media. So good on you for doing that, man. Thank you.
I really appreciated this opportunity.